Hi there, and greetings to everyone seeking and hoping to find the true meaning of life, those sick and tired of this poisonous world whose soul and spirit are bleeding, and of the emptiness and futility of this materialistic civilization. Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life. Welcome to our world of supreme love and immortality, where all human hopes are fulfilled. Welcome to the world of Orthodox Christian spirituality, a world now unknown to the West, which once had the key, but lost it a long time ago, the key that has an answer to every question. My name is monk Arsenije Jovanović. I live in the monastery of Ostrog, Montenegro. It is never too easy to talk on spiritual issues, especially when it has to be in foreign language, which is English to me. I apologize in advance for possible mistakes. However, I believe God will help me to say the word and you to understand it. So, let us embark on our waves.
Blessed is the kingdom of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, now and ever, and unto ages of ages.
Good evening, dear listeners. Here we are again, together in our radio show, The Way, The Life, The Truth. This time we are in our monastery of Ostrog, and we have this pleasure and blessing to speak with Father Mark, Father Deacon Mark, there from New York. He came here with his wife as a pilgrim, and we met here and we became friends and brother in Christ. So I will be free to ask Father Mark about his life. He's a young man, he's American, but he's Orthodox. And for us it is always very interesting for us people from Orthodox countries when somebody from West becomes Orthodox Christian. So, Father Mark, hello and
hello.
Bless.
Thank you. God bless you.
Okay, so please, like I usually like to start conversations this way, from your childhood, where are you from, what's your background, how it all started?
Well, I'm originally from South Texas. I was born in Austin, Texas. And I lived there until I was at my adolescence in Austin, Texas.
How old are you now?
I'm 31 years old now.
31. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I've lived in Baltimore, Maryland as well. And then I went back to Texas for high school, this time to San Antonio. And then I actually went back to Baltimore for college. So I was sort of back and forth between South Texas and
How was your childhood? How do you remember it?
It was a good childhood.
Yeah. You told me your father was Orthodox.
My father converted to the Orthodox Church from the Episcopalian Church, the Anglican Church. And
what jurisdiction?
He was Episcopalian.
No, I mean...
what jurisdiction? Orthodoxy.
Yeah.
Antiochian. Orthodox Church of North America.
Mm-hmm.
The Episcopalian Church was going through a spiritual crisis, and the people no longer knew what they believed in, I think. I was never Episcopalian, I never experienced this, but my father did, and he left. And for a while, there was no church in our house. We read the Bible at home by ourselves, and my dad sort of did Sunday school with me. He got material for children, he taught me about the gospel.
But
about
Jesus. He was pious.
He was always pious, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then one evening on a Saturday, he was reading the newspaper and he looked at me and he said, "We're going to church tomorrow." And I thought that was interesting because we hadn't been to church, really. And there was a Episcopalian priest by the name of Father Gregory Matthews Green, who had left the Episcopalian Church and became Antiochian Orthodox. And he had an ad in the newspaper, and that following day was his first service.
In your city?
Yeah, and this was in Baltimore, Maryland, uh-huh. Where we were at the time. So we went to the first service that they had, and there was maybe 15 people there. They were renting a rectory from a Lutheran church, and I remember the service was very beautiful. I had never experienced the liturgy of St. John Chrysostom before. And I remember at one point looking up at my dad, and he was crying. Tears were streaming down his face. And it wasn't like him to do that. He was a pious man, but he was also a Texan and sort of tough, and it was very out of character for him to be like that. And from that moment, we kept going. We never stopped.
But you're not mentioning your mother.
Yeah, my parents divorced when I was a young child.
He didn't marry it again?
No. So, my mother, at the time, she, you know, came to the Orthodox Church with us a few times and thought it was interesting, but she never really had.
But
felt
that time they were not divorced yet.
They were divorced at that time, yeah.
But yeah. She came sometimes.
She did. She came with us like on Easter, and just to, because you know she heard I was going to church, and I showed up to the house with wearing a cross and that sort of thing. So yeah. I was about 8 years old.
But interesting that she came with you since they were divorced. So they were not split completely. I mean,
yeah.
They saw each other sometimes.
Yeah, there was a moment where we were hoping they were going to get back together. But it never, you know. Anyway, that's another story. But yeah. So anyway, I was baptized when I was 8 years old, actually. Mm-hmm. And my father was chrismated. We were baptized on Palm Sunday of 1993.
And of the Holy Spirit, now and ever, and unto ages of ages.
That was his idea, or did he ask you, do you want to be baptized? Or just told you?
He told me I was going to be baptized.
Yeah, since you were.
Yeah. And I remember my baptism vividly. Mm-hmm. I remember the chrism didn't come out of my hair for about a week, I think. The priest may have used too much, you know, he didn't know. But, yeah, it was, I remember my baptism. And then we were Orthodox, you know. I lived with my father after my parents split up. Mm-hmm. And, we were.
Brothers, sisters?
Yeah, I have an older brother.
Is he an Orthodox?
He's not Orthodox.
He's not. Didn't convert.
Didn't convert, no. Okay. But he told me.
How come? Didn't father tell him also to get baptized?
He was older. He's 7 years older than me.
So.
He was like 16, 17 at the time.
Yeah, he was already old and enough to say yes or no.
Divorce is a very terrible thing. It splits families apart. And my older brother went kind of with my mother. And I was younger and I went with my father. Yeah. And our family split.
Yeah.
That's why divorce is so bad, I think.
It's a sickness of today's world.
Yeah. So that's what happened with our family. We were fractured.
Yeah. And tell me, what does it mean when you became Orthodox? Did it really affect your life? I mean, did something change really in your home?
Well, we started putting icons up. And, you know, when I was young, I liked the church. I never had a problem with the church. Mm-hmm. When I got to be 15, 16, 17, I got a car and I started becoming interested in different things, but I still went to church because my dad made me go. And then
he was frequent.
He was frequent, yeah. Every Sunday, and on all in the feast days, and you know during Holy Week, and a lot of services during Advent. And then I went to college when I was 19, and I sort of fell out of the church. Not that I didn't start going to any other church. I didn't have a problem with the church, but I sort of fell into the secular American college experience, you know.
Did you ever inquire with Far East religions?
No.
Things like that?
I've always considered, and this is probably because of my father, a conservative. Uh-huh. And for me, that was too far out there.
Yeah.
I knew. the only other church I would...
Because many Americans love
it. Yeah, with Buddhism and
yoga. Yeah, it's very modern today.
Yeah, I really can't stand that stuff. Yoga, I can't do it. I find it painful, actually. But the only other church I may have considered would be the Roman Catholic Church, and I had a girlfriend in college that was Roman Catholic, and we would go to her church sometimes, and I never took communion there, but that would really be the only other church I would ever consider going to besides the Orthodox, yeah. At least at the time. Yeah. Yeah. And then, so from about 19 until about...
Was it college? What did you study there?
I studied, so I went to community college first, and I got an associate's degree in just general studies. And then I transferred to a four-year university, and I got a Bachelor of Science degree in Marketing and Communication Studies. And I picked that degree because I liked it. I took a mass communication class my first, the spring semester of my sophomore year, and I really, really enjoy it. It was my favorite class, so I picked that major after that. Yeah.
How did your life go at that time?
My life was probably one of an average American male. I graduated college, I got a job. I was living in Baltimore.
Together with a girl?
I was still with that Roman Catholic girl. And my life was pretty basic, you know. And I remember around 24...
What did you like to do?
What did I like to do during that time?
Except a job.
Except job, you know, I would go to bars and drink and go to football games and baseball games and go to parties and, you know, I'd hang out with my friends a lot. We would take trips to New York City and we'd go to Washington, D.C., we'd go skiing, you know. Very, average secular American lifestyle. And the church was...
You didn't go to
I didn't go to church during that time. It was absent from my life.
You were in contact with your father. Definitely.
I was, and he would always tell me to go to church, but if there was a football game that Sunday morning or something like that, I was more interested in that, you know, at that time. And then I remember feeling sort of panic all of a sudden, which was out of the ordinary for me, especially after I graduated college. And I started to have a lot of anxiety. And I didn't really know why, because everything was going fine in my life. I had a job, I graduated college. My parents were proud of me, you know. Everything was going as society said my life should be going, you know. And but on the inside, I wasn't feeling good at all. I was feeling very, I guess we would call it spiritually sick, you know, or empty. And I started to not have a lot of joy in things that you should have joy in, like going to a football game or hanging out with your friends or any of the things that I was doing with my spare time. You know, none of it was necessarily bad, you know, but none of it was necessarily good either. You know, and I knew that something was missing, and I went searching to find what that was. And my girlfriend at the time was a psych major, and a psychology major, and she recommended that because I was starting to have anxiety that maybe I go and talk to someone. So I called my insurance company, and they put me in contact with a psychiatrist. I went to go see the psychiatrist. And he sat and talked to me for about 2 minutes, and he wrote a prescription for antidepressants, and then left. And I said, well, I'm not depressed. I don't need, you know, I'm just feeling anxious. I don't, you know, I'm having panic sometimes.
It was a real psychiatrist. It was not like a psychotherapist.
No, it was a real psychiatrist. And so anyway, so I took the prescription home. I think it may have been like Wellbutrin or something like that. And I looked it up, and I looked into chemical imbalances in the brain, and I thought, well, this doesn't seem right. I don't think I have an imbalance in my brain. And how could he possibly know that after it's only talking to me for 2 minutes? You know, it's impossible. And he didn't even do any tests or anything. How can you? And then I found you can't even test for it. It's just, you know, they don't really know how those medications react. And I wasn't having any other mental health symptoms just besides I was feeling panicked. Really, really panicked.
All the time or sometimes?
All the time. For about 3 or 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. when I was searching to...
There was no trigger for it or something?
No,
happened?
Just panic.
Just panic. Came by itself.
Yeah, like sort of an anxiety, a fear based. Mm-hmm. I didn't really... There was nothing to be anxious or nervous about.
Did you have any your personal way how to escape this, how to overcome this? Or you just didn't know what to do?
You know, I would try exercising, mm-hmm. all the secular stuff.
Yeah.
Going on a walk in the park, breathing.
Yeah.
I went to see a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. None of it made it. In fact, I think it all made it worse.
Did you maybe talk to your father at the time about?
I didn't. No.
No.
I never talked to my father mm-hmm. about it. It was something that was sort of personal. I didn't really want to share with a lot of people. So I'm sharing it now because I think it may benefit someone else out there listening.
Definitely.
It may have, because I think my story is a lot of people could relate to it.
Yes, definitely.
You know, and
in Serbia, in New York, and in Europe.
In Serbia, yeah. I mean, average male, young male lifestyle. It's, you know, especially in contemporary society today in the West.
Yeah.
And then I went to a psychologist to talk to him about some of my anxiety, and that didn't really go anywhere. And then
you didn't continue with the psychiatrist anymore?
I didn't go to the psychiatrist and I didn't take the medication, but mm-hmm. I thought, well, maybe I just need to talk to someone.
Yeah.
So I went to a psychologist, a talk therapist, and I met with him for 2 or 3 months and it didn't really make much of a difference. So I remember one day I was at my mother's house and it just dawned on me that maybe I should go to church.
She told you that?
My mother did, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember telling me, she goes, maybe you should go to church tomorrow, which I told her how I was feeling, you know, and that I'd been anxious for a couple months. I didn't really know why, and something felt like it was missing. I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know what to do. I explored a few options. None of them worked, you know.
Yeah.
None of them seemed like they were viable, and I didn't know what to do. I was feeling lost.
Yeah.
And so I went to church. I Googled, I remembered Holy Cross from when I was a young kid, and I Googled their name, and I got their address, looked on their website, and saw the time for matins. And
so it was in a different town than where your father used to live?
Yeah, uh-huh. This was in Maryland. I was in Maryland at the time. My dad was still in Texas.
Uh-huh.
And I went, and I remember walking back into the church, and it had been a while, you know, since I'd been, you know, when I'd go back home, I'd go with my dad, and but it'd been a while since I'd gone on my own. You know, I wanted to go, or I was excited about going to church.
Yeah.
Or I was searching for something. And
it was Sunday?
It was Sunday. And I remember walking into the church, and there was just Antiochian Church. Yeah, Holy Cross Antiochian Church in Latham, Maryland. And there was just this peace in there. And it was like being healed immediately. From all my fear, all my anxiety, all my panic.
At that one time?
At that one time.
Yeah. During the liturgy or even before?
As soon as I walked into the church. And, you know, the parable of the prodigal son comes to mind. And that's probably my favorite parable.
Yeah. Mine too.
And I think if it was up to me, of course, the bishop gives us a lectionary and we have to stick to it.
Yeah.
But if it was up to me, I would preach every Sunday on the prodigal son.
Yeah.
I think it's just a masterpiece.
Yeah.
That God is a like the rich father who runs to you when you're coming back. I think the greatest thing that you can do is come back once you've left.
Yeah.
You know.
I think of my old Bible, where I used to, that I used to read at that time, I think there is still, how do you say in English, a dance from tears.
Yeah.
That very part of gospel.
Yeah.
Mine tears.
And you definitely don't deserve it. I didn't do anything to deserve the grace that I felt when I walked into the church. I hadn't done anything noble, you know. It didn't make sense. I was Yeah, like the prodigal son, I had squandered everything that was given to me as a kid. You know? Yeah. And I left it and just didn't even think about it. Mm-hmm. And went off. And it was all given back to me in an instant. It was like having sandals put on your feet, a robe thrown on your back, and a ring put on your finger.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling my, you know, the thought of...
Did you take communion that Sunday?
I did. I shouldn't have, because I should have gone to confession. And the priest gave it to me, but then he talked to me afterwards and told me to come back for confession the following Saturday, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
But it was important to you.
Yeah, it was. I felt like I had to take communion that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I know now it was not appropriate to do that. I should have gone to confession first, because I hadn't been to communion in so long. But there was a lot of grace that was tied up in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to confession the following Saturday. Luckily, I had a good pastor who was... I think Father Gregory knew I needed to go to confession. You know.
Was he an Arab or American?
No, he was the Episcopalian priest that converted.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And, yeah.
So it all happened at that Sunday.
Yeah, but... You have to keep going back. Every time I walk into the altar to serve a liturgy, I get that same feeling. Not as intense as that first Sunday back, but I get the same feeling.
Yeah, thank God.
Of returning home again.
Yeah.
And the Father running out to meet you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not something that you can just do once.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why, you know, I feel called to...
So did those anxieties
stop
or come sometimes again?
The anxiety I was having completely stopped. I still have, you know, normal fear, like am I gonna catch my flight? Am I gonna pass the test?
Yeah.
Or am I gonna is my kid gonna be born healthy? You know,
yeah,
my
sure.
wife's pregnant right now.
Sure.
So normal stuff like people worry about, but yeah. the anxiety I was having is completely gone.
That was important thing for you, actually.
Yeah.
It was something that you were missing, actually.
Yeah. It was something that only God could give you.
Yeah. So how did your life continue after that Sunday?
I started going to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
I started to be more involved.
Where did you live?
This was in Baltimore. And I started to teach Sunday school, and I started to help out with the local OCF, the Orthodox Christian Fellowship, which is it's a college campus ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I started going to church a lot more. I met my wife at church. And
In
Baltimore.
Oh. Tell us about that.
It was a Vespers service. It was Thursday night. Yeah. Again, my mother told me to go to church that night, which is funny.
She's not interested. She's not,
she's not Orthodox. No.
How important she was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
My mother told me to go to church that Sunday, and then she told me to go to church that Thursday night. My mother's a Christian. She's just not Orthodox.
Yeah.
But I'm working on that. I might, maybe when I become a priest, God willing, I'll chrismate him, but we'll see.
Yeah. Slowly.
Yeah. It was a Thursday night, Vespers, and I went there, and again, it was, as soon as I walked into the church that day and I saw her, I knew that I was going to marry her.
How sad for those who with faith, reverence, and fear of God enter therein. Let us pray to the Lord.
Were you still together with that previous girl?
No. I'd broken up with the previous girl.
Okay.
And I just knew.
Yeah?
Yeah. Right away, like that. And I didn't want to wait, so Father Gregory introduced us, same priest.
Uh-huh.
And I asked her out.
How did he know that he should introduce you?
Because we were both young people in the church on a Thursday, and
uh-huh.
there wasn't too many young people at Vespers on Thursday.
Uh-huh.
So we went outside and talked, and I asked her out on a date. And we went out on a date Friday night.
Is she much
younger
than you?
We're the same age.
Same age. Oh, yeah. She looks so young.
Yeah, she's 31 too.
Yeah.
And we went out on a date the following night, and I remember I was going to wait a couple of days to call her, and then she called me, which I was excited about.
She called first.
She called first, yeah. And we started dating from then, and We got engaged 6 months later and married.
When that was? When that happened? I did this critical Sunday and.
Oh, the time between them?
Yeah.
It's probably about a year or so, I'd say.
So when it was? You're coming back to the church again?
Yeah.
That Sunday. What year was that?
What year was that?
Approximately.
2009, 2010, something like that.
So not that far away.
No. Yeah. Uh-huh. And my wife and I got married in 2011. No, it may have been even 2008, 2009, something. Mm-hmm. My wife had gone she worked for IOCC, and she'd gone to Tbilisi, Georgia, after the Georgians had a war with the Russians, to help with some humanitarian aid work for assist with the refugees. Mm-hmm. She was there for like 9-10 months.
Tell us about her background.
She's Serbian Orthodox, which is, and her her patron saint is Basil of Orstrog, which is why we're here, the Orstrog Monastery in Montenegro.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we came on a pilgrimage. And we ran into a very nice monk who we're talking to right now, who speaks English. So he's been taking care of two pilgrims. It's hard when you're a foreigner, you know, and you don't understand the language.
Yes.
So, here we are.
Was she like an active Orthodox Christian at that time?
I think she was. She grew up in the church too. And I know during college she had a falling away period, just like anyone else. I was more attracted to secular American culture.
Uh-huh.
And I think she was more attracted by some of the evangelical Protestant groups.
How come?
They're very nice at first, you know, welcoming.
Yeah. But her father is Orthodox.
Father's Orthodox, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, they attract people. I think emotionally, like it's sort of like a rotating door almost.
Uh-huh.
You go in real quick, but then you come out real quick too. It's sort of. I don't think she never like officially converted or anything, but I think she started going to Young Life. Which was a Protestant Christian group in college, and she lived in a Christian.
What did she study?
She studied communications too, which is kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
We both studied the same thing. She went to the University of Montana. I think she lived in a Christian dorm area where there was no like smoking and no drinking, and most of the people there were evangelical Christians that she was living around during college.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't much of an Orthodox presence. At her campus, which is why the things like OCF, I feel, are very important.
But how come she came to the Vespers, to the Orthodox Church?
She came to the Orthodox Church for Vespers to deliver a bunch of icons from Georgia to the priest to get blessed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So she was not frequent in Orthodox Church?
I think she was, yeah.
Yeah.
She was, yeah.
She was.
At that time.
Yes.
Yeah. She had sort of started coming, I think once she got her job at IOCC after college, she sort of started, you know, coming back towards being a regular.
But then there came a very, 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 very specific and serious decision in your life that maybe you want to become a priest.
Yeah.
So how it came?
Well, I was working at a hospital. My goal is to become a hospital administrator. Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to do. And there was a group of Roman Catholic nuns in the pastoral care department at the hospital. It was a Roman Catholic hospital. Baltimore is a predominantly Roman Catholic town.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they have the Baltimore Catechism, which is what they use, I think, to teach people about the Catholic faith throughout the whole country.
Yeah,
came out of Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So, Maryland, Maryland, it was founded by English Catholics originally.
Right, yeah.
So, what was I going to that? Anyway, there was a group of Roman Catholic nuns at the hospital. And they sort of, I was friends with them, I would talk with them. Their office was next to mine. And,
were they in their habits, or?
They were Sisters of Mercy, so they wore like very conservative clothing, but not in habits.
Like a civilian clothes.
Civilian clothing, yeah.
Yeah.
Like a sports coat with a lower dress and shoes and stockings and, you know, more conservative dress. And, two of them, they kind of quartered me one day, and they suggested that I should consider becoming a Roman Catholic priest. They thought I'd be really good as a priest. Because I was always on the units with our patients. I was more interested in visiting the patients who were dying than I was in doing a lot of the administrative paperwork.
Yeah.
So I would sit and talk with people a lot, even on my lunch. I'd go and eat lunch with them or talk with them. I've known hundreds of people that have died from working at the hospital. I've seen a lot of people die. I was working in geriatrics, so I was...
What is that?
It's with the elderly.
Oh, geriatrics, yes. Yeah. Yes. All the people.
And I wanted to be a nursing home administrator.
Uh-huh.
They thought I had a really good way with people, I guess. Yeah. I guess they observed me a lot.
How do you remember those Roman Catholic nuns?
They were very... they're kind of like Mother Teresa, I think.
Yeah. Charity.
Yeah.
Love.
Charity and love.
Yeah.
So a few of them were more into like the social part of the Roman Catholic Church.
Uh-huh. Do they ever talk about deeper levels of prayer, Holy Fathers, spiritual part of the whole thing?
One of them did, Sister Joan.
Yeah.
Her brother was a priest, a Roman Catholic priest.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was a Monsignor. And she would say the rosary a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you didn't become Roman Catholic.
No, I didn't become Roman Catholic.
But
that would
be a trigger for priesthood?
Absolutely. That was the first time I really thought about it. I'd never thought about it until, you know, I wanted to be I wanted to stay in healthcare.
Yeah.
You know. And I liked it, and I miss being with patients. I'm doing an internship at a psychiatric hospital this summer as a chaplain.
Yeah.
Which is okay. But I really like working with the elderly population, because when you're with people that are so close to death, it's sort of like being in the desert, I think, for a lot of like monks or monks that go to a hermitage or something.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a place where life, it's almost impossible to exist, right?
Yeah.
So, and for these people, they're at the end of their life and life is running out of them. It's, you know, it's impossible for it to exist. And in those moments, you find yourself really close to God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not easy.
It's not easy, no.
To be with people like that. Probably most of them are desperate.
You know, I think when they first get into the hospital, they are.
Uh-huh.
They say that there's like 5 stages of death. I don't believe that. I've been around too many people that have died. Like they say there's bargaining and acceptance and I forget the other 3.
Uh-huh,
but.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how accurate that is.
Yeah. What do you mean by that? I mean, they're just...
I think it's different for everyone.
Uh-huh.
And it depends on your relationship with Christ.
Yeah.
I know people that were ready to meet the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I know people that screamed.
Yeah.
Blood-curdling screams.
Mm-hmm.
When they were dying.
Really?
Because I think they knew that their soul was not right.
Yeah.
That's what it sounded, and that's what the scream sounded like. They didn't want to die, and they're terrified.
Yeah.
You know.
Because they saw they're not dying, actually.
Yeah.
They're just changing the world.
Some people just fell asleep very peacefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all depends, I believe, how we maintain our consciousness. How do we listen to it?
Yeah. So anyway, I would sit with these people a lot and talk to them and pray with them, even.
Mm-hmm.
I'd read the Bible to them. Especially the parts about the resurrection. They always liked that. And the nuns picked up on that. They saw that, I guess, up to I'm assuming, which is why they talked to me that day.
And so how does it go further on? I mean, from you already got married?
I got married in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2012, I entered St. Vladimir's Seminary.
Mm-hmm. You moved together?
Yeah, we moved there to New York together. And then I was
so here you have decided to enter the seminary?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I talked to my father confessor about it and the bishop, and they thought it was the right thing for me to do.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your studying now. How does it look like?
At St. Vladimir's?
Yes.
It's a very fine institution.
Uh-huh.
I'll be going into my 3rd year.
It lasted 3 years.
It's a Master's of Divinity degree.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a deacon. I was ordained to the diaconate last fall.
Uh-huh.
And I serve at a parish in New Jersey. And
is there any higher degree after this?
They have more academic degrees there.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I'll pursue any of that. I'm more interested in working with people than in books.
Yeah. So since you became a servant of altar, Yeah. Tell us a little bit how it's new dimension now. I mean, yeah. The liturgy. How do you find yourself on the other side of the icon screen?
I'm terrified back there most of the time, honestly. Especially when the bishop's there. I served with the bishop today, uh-huh. and I have to pray the whole time to get through it. Uh-huh. I'm scared a lot of the time back there.
In what way scared?
Fear and trembling in the presence of God, uh-huh. you know, uh-huh. is intimidating.
Yeah.
You feel very small and insignificant. Yeah. And you can sense that there's other things around you than the people standing there.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So, with God's help and His grace, you will become one day a priest. Yeah. So tell us, how do you see the difference? Because I believe you know the Roman Catholic priests over there. Yeah. How do you see the difference these days, today or ever? Now, you as an Orthodox priest, is there a difference? I mean, between a Roman Catholic priest and I mean, in life, in action, in deeds.
Yeah, there's a big difference.
There's a big difference.
Yeah. I think the Roman Catholic priests in North America are, for the most part, sacrament machines. They have very big churches and they're understaffed and they have to attend to a lot of people.
Sacrament machines.
Yeah, they have liturgies 3 or 4 times a day, some of them. And,
really?
Yeah, they have liturgies on Saturday night, 2 or 3 liturgies on Sunday. And
how come? A lot of.
There's still a lot of Roman Catholics in the country and there's not a lot of priests around.
Uh-huh.
So, the Orthodox priests, I see more on the, what shall we say, on the local level with people,
mm-hmm.
interacting, talking, communicating,
mm-hmm.
evangelizing.
Yeah.
They're out of the parishes,
yeah.
on the street,
mm-hmm.
where they need to be.
Yeah.
And they're in the parish when they need to be. You know, and that's important if you're going to make disciples of all nations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You can't just stay in the church the whole time.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Tell me, is your wife aware what is expecting her? And because to be a priest's wife is not just a regular secular woman.
Yeah, she
is. It's a burden as well.
I know, she is. And we have a lot of support through our archdiocese.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other really good priest wives that we're friends with and, you know, priests.
Yeah.
And so there's a good network of people for us to stay in touch with.
Yeah. Can you tell us now, we are approaching a little bit the end of this conversation, but I would like you to, because I used to live in the United States, but it was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us now a little bit about life in America and how do you see, where does it go? Do you see the future of that society?
I see an Orthodox Christian America.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's ripe for the harvest.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah.
I think people are just like me searching for something.
Yeah.
Just like I was, and they haven't found it.
Is Orthodox Church ready for that? Is it strong enough? Is it aware of it?
The Orthodox Church is strong enough for it because Christ is at the center of the Orthodox Church.
Yeah.
But I think I wouldn't ever insult us to say that we're not ready for it. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see yourself as a missionary one day?
Yeah, I do. I'm really inspired.
In the frame of your profession.
A missionary in North America, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm very inspired by our late Metropolitan Philip Saliba,
mm-hmm.
Who was a very mission mindset kind of man. And I think about him a lot. He passed away last March. I feel very connected with him.
Yeah, he was Arab?
He was Arab, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But American.
Are they more open for missionary work, Arabs? Because sometimes
some of them are. Metropolitan Philip was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now we have a lot of immigrants from the Middle East, and they require it's a different sort of needs than converts have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, So some of our parishes are taking care of the immigrants and some of them are taking care of the converts. I think North America is ready for Orthodoxy. I think before that happens, we will have to mature a little bit more. And hopefully it happens within my lifetime, but if not, the next couple hundred years, we'll see what happens.
Yes.
And then there'll have to be a united church there.
Yeah.
Not just a bunch of different jurisdictions.
Yes, definitely.
Shooting past each other.
Yeah.
Sure. There'll have to be a one church there. It'll have to be a North American church. If we're ready for that yet, I'm just a deacon. I'm.
Sure. Yeah.
That's above my pay grade.
Do people know for late Father Seraphim Rose?
They do.
They do?
Yeah, people know about him.
I personally think he's the first authentical American saint.
Yeah.
Is he recognized this way? I mean, among simple Orthodox pious people?
A lot of people respect him a lot. Yeah, and they read his books. If people are praying to him as a saint, I'm not aware. I know we have a few North American saints, like St. Herman of Alaska.
Yeah, but they came from Russia.
Yeah, and St. Raphael of Brooklyn, who also came from Russia.
Yeah, but this one...
This one was authentic American.
We don't know who is in delusion or who is holy.
Yeah.
But this person looks like an authentic American Orthodox...
It could be.
Yeah.
People have a deep fondness for Father Seraphim Rose.
Mm-hmm. Did you visit monasteries, Orthodox monasteries in the United States? We have this Platina, and then we have now these new monasteries founded by Elder Ephrem.
I've been to a few Ephrem monasteries. There were women monasteries.
Yeah.
One is in Pennsylvania.
What do you think about the importance of monasticism and monasteries? Because today it's pretty ridiculous, in today's world, monasticism.
I think if we're going to Christianize North America with Orthodoxy, we're going to have a lot of monasteries.
Yeah.
The two go hand in hand.
Uh-huh.
The more monasteries that go up, the more churches will go up.
Sometimes people think that the monks are egotists. They are taking care about only their own salvation. What do you think about it? Because they go to seclude themselves in the monasteries?
I've never thought that. No, I mean, I'm a married man, I'm a clergy person. I'm not a monastic, but I've never felt that way around monastics.
Yeah. No. Do you believe in strength of prayer, or personal prayer?
I do. Yeah. I pray every day, most of the day.
Yeah.
My own just prayer.
Very good, Father Mark. Thank you very much for your. Openness.
Yeah. I hope this helps someone out there who's listening who needs the church and may not know it yet.
Yeah.
But we all need the church. Mm-hmm. The greatest thing you can do...
But the real church.
The Orthodox Church.
Yeah.
Not the Catholic Church, not the Episcopalian Church, not the Lutheran Church, the Orthodox Christian Church.
What's the difference?
The difference is that the apostles are with us.
Yeah. People think it's all the same sometimes.
It's not the same. It's not the same. Not that the other Christians are bad people.
Yes.
We don't know what God has in plan, is planning for them. But it's not up for us to decide that. But we have to speak the truth, which we have.
Yes.
And the truth is Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ is the Orthodox Church.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to come back to the Orthodox Church. And even me, a clergyman, I come back to the church every week. Just like that first week I came back, every Sunday when I show up for liturgy, it's like the same thing again. And it's that same grace that I felt that day. I feel not as intense, but I still feel it when I serve.
Father Mark, it was a great pleasure for me to talk to you, especially for our listeners. In Serbia, Montenegro, or somewhere else in the world, I believe there will be somebody who will take a benefit from this.
Mm-hmm.
And I had benefit myself. And once again, I ask your priestly, your deacon blessing.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you, Father Mark.
Thank you.
And of the Holy Spirit, now and ever, and unto ages of ages.
Thank you for listening Radio Svetigora, the radio station of the Serbian Orthodox Church, Diocese of Montenegro and the Seaside. Blessed by His High Eminence, Metropolitan Amphilochia.